Welcome to the MS News Today podcast. I'm your host, Jen Powell, and I also have secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. I am a columnist with MS News Today at multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Thank you all for listening to this podcast. Let me invite you to join our MS forums. We have over 1,000 active members discussing common themes and sharing their experience on living with multiple sclerosis. Please consider joining. You can find the link to the MS News Today forums in this episode's description. Welcome to the Multiple Sclerosis Podcast. I am your host, Jen Powell. Joining us today is Elizabeth Yarnell. Elizabeth Yarnell is a traditional naturopath, patent inventor, multi-passionate entrepreneur focused on the ways chronic inflammation influences health. When her 1999 diagnosis of multiple sclerosis inspired her to eat more healthily, she patented Glorious One Pot Meals, a cooking method to meet her need to get quick and easy but healthy dinners. She soon realized a connection between MS and inflammation. Her book, Recipes for a Vibrant Life with Multiple Sclerosis, is full of great tips and strategies on healing your body through diet. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Jen. I'm so excited to be chatting with you today.
Likewise, it's so nice to have you. I want to jump right in. You were diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 1999, just shy of your 30th birthday. Can you tell me where you were at in your life and what that was like?
You know, it was an amazing time in my life and really inconvenient to get diagnosed at that time. I had just finished graduate school, was finally making money as a freelance journalist and as an instructional designer. And in fact, the night before my big initiating exacerbation, I had been working on an article for the Denver Post on cross-country skiing. And I had been working on this article for a while, and I had been wrestling with it and putting it into a good shape. And I'd finally gotten it into what I felt like was a pretty good shape. And I had printed it out on my printer. And as I was brushing my teeth that night, I was kind of looking over the printout. And I remember thinking, oh, there are three spots that I see that I want to make small edits. And then I'll be ready to turn this into my editor. But the next morning when I woke up and I set my pages, printed out pages next to my coffee, I couldn't read them. It was almost like someone had come in and taken a big eraser, and huge chunks of text were completely missing and gone. And even what I could figure out, what I could make out, I couldn't even understand anymore. It was really terrifying. I couldn't figure out why my eyes were not working and why my brain was not understanding what it was seeing.
That is terrifying. And how did you move forward with your next steps? Did you call your primary? Did you have any idea? I mean, at 29 and three quarters, you must have been just terrified.
29 and 28, 29. Yes. I wasn't sure what to do. I knew, I felt like there was something like blocking, obstructing the vision in my eye. And so I talked to my father, who's actually a neurologist. And he said, well, you need to go to the eye doctor. And I said, well, I don't have an eye doctor. And he said, well, hang on, I'll make you an appointment with my friend, the eye doctor. And so he called me back and said, you need to go on right now and go into the office of the eye doctor. And I went in to see the eye doctor, and he said, well, it looks like you have optic neuritis, and we're going to send you right in for an MRI, and you need to get back in your car and drive right over to the hospital and get an MRI right away. And when I came out of the MRI, My father was there, my mother was there, my stepmother, my stepfather, my aunt. Everyone was in the radiology reading room. And that's where my father showed me these images of my brain that had multiple sclerosis lesions on them.
Well, I get emotional thinking about that, because going into that support, though, makes me emotional. You had a good support system. That is so crucial. But you must have been very confused as to where your next steps would lead in your life, especially with your inability to see at that time and your journalistic endeavors. Was there a moment which inspired you to look at what your lifestyle was and see if that contributed in any factor to the multiple sclerosis?
Well, in addition to not knowing what I was going to do as a career for the rest of my life if I couldn't read or write, I had also just recently gotten engaged. And my fiance and I we had met on a chairlift on a ski hill, and we were very active. We had just come back from a big adventure travel experience, doing a horseback trip across the Eastern Tibetan Plateau.
And, oh my gosh, that sounds very romantic.
But I had to ask him, you know, this, when you proposed to me, this wasn't the future that you envisioned, because I had learned that 80% of MS patients experience significant disability within 10 years of diagnosis. So here I was, 22 weeks before my 30th birthday, learning that probably by my 40th birthday, I was going to be in a wheelchair. So I didn't know what to do, but it was my fiance, who was a competitive athlete, who really suggested that maybe my diet might have something to do with how I was feeling. And I had to admit, he probably had a point, because really for the whole decade of my 20s, I lived alone and I didn't pay any attention to what I was eating. I either ate at restaurants or fast food, or I simply skipped the meals. And the only staple foods that I kept in my apartment were Crystal Light, Diet Coke, and gummy bears.
I think a lot of us can relate to that decade where you just do what you have to do to move on, because you're moving fast. I think it must have been kind of a aha moment to reevaluate that and say, wow, maybe that is something. Maybe there's something there. So did you immediately take next steps to modify your diet, or how did you assimilate that information into what I've read, putting things in the microwave, making them mesh and coming out beautifully? I want to hear what your magic potion was.
Well, not in the microwave for sure. But, you know, my doctors told me, oh, there's nothing you can change about your diet that will make any difference with the course of your MS. There's nothing that you can do to change anything. Maybe you can take one of these, or you absolutely need to take one of these disease modifying therapies, which at that time were all injectable. And that might slow the progression down, but you're still going to end up completely disabled, just like everybody else with MS. It was very disheartening and really sent me into a pretty big depression, as you might imagine. And I didn't know what a healthy diet looked like. So I had to really start from the beginning and start researching. And I got books from like the Mayo Clinic and the ADA and the Heart Association. And really what I thought that it all came down to was that the concept that whole foods were better than processed foods. I didn't want to follow a fad diet like paleo or keto or anything like that. That all seemed like fads. And I really wanted health, not fads. So I thought, okay, well, whole foods, a whole foods based diet, not the grocery store, of course, but whole foods that are not processed foods. I thought, okay, well, if that's what I need to do, then I guess that's what I need to do. But I didn't know how to cook. So I started taking cooking classes and watching the Food Network, which was in its infancy at the time, and experimenting in the kitchen, quickly learning that when you are cooking with whole foods, which is basically cooking from scratch, that everything is very time and labor intensive. And you know, Jen, fatigue is a hallmark of MS. So that was just exhausting. But my fiance was pretty adamant that I needed to clean up my diet. And so I was on the lookout for methods of cooking that would help me prepare whole foods more quickly, more easily, with less effort. And I really wasn't finding a lot of answers that I thought would work for me until one night we were watching late night TV, and we only had three channels at the time. We couldn't afford cable. And the guy says, "Look, you can make your whole meal with this one countertop appliance." And he puts in dry rice and a can of tomatoes, and then a metal like grate over the top, like a barbecue grill type grate. Puts chicken breasts on top of that, puts another metal grill grate, and then on top of that, puts brownies, covers the whole thing with a dome, plugs it in, and turns it on. And I thought, oh my gosh, that is absolutely brilliant. I would like to be able to make my meals in that one utensil just like that. But I didn't have that appliance, and I thought it was probably pretty expensive. I didn't have any metal barbecue grill type grates, and I didn't really care about the brownies. So I went over to my oven and I thought, okay, well, that appliance that guy has on TV probably gets pretty hot. So I turned on my oven to 450 degrees because, again, I really didn't know anything about cooking. If you know anything about cooking, you're probably laughing. You're like, the only things you cook at 450 are like breads and cakes.
Oh, I'm right there with you. So you are, trust me, I'm enjoying this very much. So please.
We had just received a cast iron Dutch oven as a wedding gift. And we had looked at it, and I thought, I just such a pretty pot because it was brightly colored and enamel coated. But what are we going to even use this for? And so I thought, you know, maybe I'll just use this little pot and kind of, in some ways, kind of recreate what the guy was doing on the infomercial and like the definition of innovation, right? So I didn't invent from scratch, but I innovated an idea that I had. And so I went to my freezer and I had some frozen fish fillets, and I went to my fridge and I had some fresh vegetables and I had some herbs from my garden, and I kind of layered them all into this cast iron Dutch oven, put the lid on it, and put it in the 400 degree oven. Well, in about half an hour, it just started to smell like dinner. And that really just became the way that we started cooking as newlyweds, that we would just kind of throw things into the cast iron Dutch oven and put it into a 450 degree oven. And lo and behold, every night it was an amazing dinner that would come out. I
That's
didn't really even think that much about it until my college roommate came to visit for a week. And at the end of the week, she said, "Would you please teach me how to cook like you cook?" And I said to her, "Well, you saw me do it. I just throw everything into the cast iron Dutch oven." And she said, "Well, I think there's a little bit more to it than that." And I thought, okay, maybe you're right. So that's when I sat down and wrote out a manuscript for my cookbook, Glorious One Pot Meals. And but I couldn't get a publisher, I couldn't get an agent, I couldn't get anyone to publish it for me. They all came back with the same. I have like a stack of like 50 rejection letters that say things like, "This is a great concept, but no one's going to buy a cookbook from a nobody. Nobody knows who you are. You're not Martha Stewart. You're not Rachel Ray. You're not even Wolfgang Puck, who has like a restaurant and a whole line of foods." And I thought, well, this is a terrible catch 22. I have a cookbook and everybody who tries it loves it. But how can I get a platform without a cookbook? And how can I have a cookbook without a platform? But I started doing things like teaching cooking demonstrations at health fairs, and I got a gig teaching cooking classes at my local cooking school for, and that lasted like more than a decade. And in the meantime, I was doing like television spots and telethons, and anything I could do to get the word out there about this cooking method. And finally, 5 years later, I gave up on the publishing world and decided to publish it myself, which turned out to be a great thing to do because in the first month, I sold out my entire first print run of 3,000 cookbooks. I made the local bestsellers list for like 3 or 4 months in a row. I ended up selling 15,000 copies myself, and then Random House bought it from me, and it is still selling now over 70,000 copies.
Congratulations. It just goes to show the niche that often we know innately is needed. many don't know because you hit a spot that was missing. And I want to bring to people that when Elizabeth talks about glorious one-pot meals, we're not talking about the crock pot. What we're talking about is the philosophy of the one-pot meal, right? Just putting everything together. I want to differentiate that. And
yes.
During
not
that
a crock pot, not an Instapot.
Exactly.
Yes.
But I have the book and I love looking through the recipes because I found that a few can work among one another as well. And for someone like me who has progressive MS, I'm fatigued at the end of the day. And the last thing I want to do is cook. But in an effort to eat better, your book has really guided me well. So
thank you. Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
It
And
really
you
does.
Know, of course, that every recipe is completely adaptable, so you can turn it into whatever you want. But here's the better part for us with MS is that you can take any combination of fresh, frozen, or canned foods and put them into your glorious one pot meal, and they doesn't change the cooking time, doesn't make it if they all come out at the same time and they're all cooked perfectly. So I love to do things like frozen fish fillets, frozen chicken breasts, boneless, skinless chicken breasts, and other types of frozen shrimp, things like that. Throw them in there, even frozen vegetables, because if you do like organic frozen vegetables, those are almost as good as fresh, and you don't have to do any chopping, any peeling, nothing. You literally just open the bag, shake it into the cast iron Dutch oven, put the lid on it, and voila, you have this fantastic dinner of whole foods.
And during this time when you begin to self-publish, you were on a disease-modifying therapy for 3 years before you made the decision to stop. And they did not make you feel well, from what I read.
That is correct. I did choose, as I said, my father is a neurologist, and he was quite insistent that I start a disease-modifying therapy immediately. And it was not something I wanted to do because, as I said, the only disease-modifying therapies at that time were all injectable. There were three. They were called the ABCs, the Avonex, Betaseron, Copaxone. And I have a huge needle phobia. I have always hated needles, hated vaccinations, all of that stuff. So that was a big mental trauma, I would say, to get myself to the point where I could inject myself every day with one of these drugs. Very soon after I started doing it, because I was trying to be obedient and follow my doctor's instructions, and I certainly wanted to do everything I could to stay out of a wheelchair, but within the first year of taking the drug, I started to have side effects. The first one was hives that came all over my body, not just at the injection site, like the pharmaceuticals like to say they do, but literally all over my body. A good day was 30 hives. A bad day was 300 hives. There were days that my face was so distorted, I couldn't leave the house because I would frighten young children if I saw them. That was besides the fact that what happens with hives is your whole body is like on fire and itching and super uncomfortable to live inside your body. And that progressed eventually after a year or so to convulsions. And I would start convulsing before the needle even came out of my skin from the shot. And I would talk to the pharmaceutical company that made the therapy, and they would say, well, this isn't one of our side effects. And I'd be like, unfortunately, however, it is with me. And they would say, well, it's better to take the drug than not to take the drug. And finally, I came to the point that I was still having significant MS exacerbations at a regular rate, even though I was taking the disease-modifying therapy. And the rest of my life was really miserable because I was not functioning well at all. And I felt like I was going downhill. I had already started changing my diet and cleaning up my environment and was well on my path to that. But I finally got to the point where I felt like I could not tolerate the drugs anymore and that I would do better without them.
And during this time, your son was born and you were Yeah, like it's a smile on your face. And he had some pretty severe reactions that you later found were helped by your whole eating due to the reduction of inflammation in his body. How did you make that connection?
You know, it was hard to figure that out. So when my son was born, he had projectile vomiting all the time, like many babies, a lot of colic. Then he also had terrible, terrible constipation that would alternate with explosive diarrhea. And this is common with a lot of babies, but by the time he was six, it was still happening. He was still vomiting like 20 times a week, all the time. And we had taken him to pediatric GI clinics. We had taken him to get abdominal x-rays. We even got his DNA mapped. And all the doctors could say was, well, give him Miralax. That will help with his constipation. But after 2 years of Miralax, the one thing that I was positive about was that it was not a Miralax deficiency that was his problem. So finally, when he was six, it kind of all came to a head. And as you can imagine, I was feeling like a complete and utter failure as a mother. My poor baby was just suffering constantly, and I couldn't figure it out. He had fallen off the height and weight charts. He was really failing to thrive. And on top of that, he was very unhappy because he was miserable within his body, couldn't sleep through the whole night because he would have acid reflux coming up all the time. We tried different diet changes. We took out wheat, we took out dairy, we took out corn. Nothing seemed to make any difference for him. So finally, I took him to a naturopath and she said, you know, I think this sounds like food sensitivities. And I said, well, he doesn't get hyper anaphylaxis. And he doesn't have hives. And she says, well, those are food allergies. She says, I'm talking about food sensitivities that cause inflammation in the body. And there is one test that really does a really good job of looking for this. And it's called the MRT. And I said, fine, let's try it. And we tried it. And when the test results came back, he was reactive to fully one third of the items that were tested. Still, to this day, the worst test I've ever seen. Now I've run hundreds of these tests. But once we were able to identify the foods that were actually causing his body to become inflamed, which were some of the foods we were so proud of him for being such a good eater, like broccoli, that was his favorite food, was broccoli. Also lemon and garlic, things we think of as very, very healthy. Once we removed those from his world, it was amazing. He stopped vomiting. He started pooping regularly. He started sleeping through the night, stopped wetting the bed almost immediately at 6 years old. Started being a happier kid. One day I remember passing by his room and hearing him singing to himself. And he had never been happy enough to do that. And I still look back on that moment as that was the turning point.
Well, that was a turning point for many things in your life. I want to bring to people that Elizabeth is a traditional naturopath, but at this time in her life, she wasn't. And I find that incredible because you actually went the next step in your life. And I almost feel like your son was a catalyst for a decision to pursue this. Was he indeed the catalyst to pursue becoming a naturopath? Because that's not easy.
He was, because all of a sudden there was a solution for him that none of the doctors had. And when we changed his diet, at first I thought, okay, these are going to be the shelves of food for Jeremy and everybody else in the family. We're going to keep eating the regular foods. I was already following a whole foods-based diet and I had already made tremendous strides in my own health and was feeling pretty good most of the time and not having a lot of MS exacerbations. But when I tried to change just his diet, now I tell my clients, it's a recipe for a mental breakdown for mom, because it was just too hard to make a whole meal for him and then a whole meal for the rest of the family. And so finally I said, you know what? The whole family, we are just all going to eat what Jeremy eats. And this is going to be a show of solidarity for him. It's not weird food. It's all regular food. It's just not going to be broccoli, right? The things that he can't eat. And once we did that for myself too, my improvement was amazing. I dropped a bunch of weight that I had kind of held on to since the babies were born. I was feeling tremendously energetic, and I felt like this is what should be the foundation for everybody. So I had already started studying natural health, but you're right, I hadn't been taking that step to go further to get my actual degree as a traditional naturopath. But that was a big part of the inspiration to do that.
Would you explain to our listeners what a naturopath is? I think many of our listeners might not know.
Yes. So a traditional naturopath uses remedies such as herbs and flowers and light and energy and sleep and meditation there's all kinds of water. There's all kinds of therapies. Even sauna is considered a natural therapy. Any kind of therapy that doesn't have to do with pharmaceutical medications. That's really the biggest difference between naturopaths and medical doctors. Medical doctors are trained in pharmaceuticals. They're trained to match the pharmaceutical to the symptoms to try to relieve or suppress the symptoms. And naturopaths are trained to look to the root cause of the symptoms, not the symptoms themselves, the root cause. So for me, I look for the inflammation that is causing the symptoms, and address that instead. And do that very holistically with natural resources.
And when you did that, did you find a mitigation in your own symptoms in your multiple sclerosis?
100%. I began investigating all sorts of different natural therapies, from Reiki to Jin Jitsu, which are both energy healing modalities. I explored Bach flower essences. I explored homeopathy. All of these things that I use today in my clinic, I started with exploring myself to try to help myself improve the course of my disease and therefore my own future.
Tell us about your clinic.
So my clinic is nationwide. It's virtual. It opened in 2011 after I got my degree as a traditional naturopath and also my certification as a food sensitivity therapist, because that is really, I think, again, what I feel like is the crux and the foundation of issues for so many people. And it comes from what we're eating. And, you know, I did a TED talk in 2014 and talked about the poisons in our everyday foods and how our food supply has become so contaminated with artificial flavors, artificial colors, artificial sweeteners, all of these synthetic additives and preservatives that our bodies did not evolve to know how to process. Because really, we as humans evolved on this planet eating the foods, the plants, the animals that are on the surface of this planet. Evolution never thought that we would be putting substances from 2 miles below the earth into our bodies or on our bodies. And that's so much of pharmaceuticals are petroleum based, and so much of these additives and preservatives in our food supplies are petroleum based. So much of the products we're putting on our skin, our personal care products, are petroleum based. And I think that that's a big part of our toxicity in our bodies that tips us over into autoimmunity.
For someone who is listening and wants to take a first step into whole eating, but feels overwhelmed, as so many do, because we often have symptomatology we're dealing with and we're wondering how much can we handle. What are some first steps, and how can people get in touch with you to learn more about your clinic, your book, which is Living Healthy with MS, and your practice?
So I do have an ebook called Recipes for a Vibrant Life with MS, and you can pick that up on my website for sure. That I call that kind of a primer. That is a very gentle first step introduction into changing your lifestyle and your eating habits to improve your own course of multiple sclerosis or really any other autoimmune or chronic illness. My new book, which is coming out very soon, I'm super excited to talk about, is called The Multiple Sclerosis Inflammation Connection. And it is more of a guide to go from life sentence to life solution. And it talks about a lot of these strategies of swapping out the artificial and synthetic substances that you're getting exposed to for natural alternatives, and just really getting started that way. But if you want to really make a commitment to yourself and start working toward helping your own body, I have a staircase of programs that I take people through in my clinic. The first one is a 7-day kickstart. It's super easy. You literally get 7 days of emails in your inbox that each one of them just talks about one little thing that you can change to start cleaning up your body, start lowering your toxic burden in order for your body to be able to heal. And then they progress from there. And each one of them is kind of just a little step forward in getting closer to your goal of reclaiming your body and reclaiming your health until you can move upwards. And if you are interested in doing the food sensitivity testing, that is one of the levels as well in the staircase. So if you would like to learn more about that, for sure, go visit elizabethyarnell.com. That's my home base where everything is. And the first step is to go to the bottom of any page there and schedule a complimentary naturopathic health assessment with me. And we'll see what's most appropriate for you to come in, for your commitment, for your time, for your interest, for your finances, all of that.
That's wonderful. And I will have in this episode's description a link to Elizabeth's site. I really like to, and I think we should do so in another podcast, explore more about the link between inflammation and the foods that we eat, the way that we live, the stress that we manifest, because I think to your point, that is as important as any other aspect of our treatment.
I think so too. I think there are so many elements that go into holistic healing, right? I don't focus on just one thing. Conventional medicine will look at a symptom and try to suppress it or relieve it. That's not what I want. I want to find out, why are you having that symptom to begin with? And let's get at the root so that you can stop having the symptom and you don't need to take that drug to suppress or relieve it.
And I like the staircase because I think people have little victories and wins that they can feel confident about and then move on to another and then move on to another. And in that way, it's not so overwhelming.
I would agree 100% with that.
Elizabeth, it's so fascinating to speak with you. What message would you like to leave our listeners?
The message that I really try to spread throughout everything that I do and with every MS population that I talk to is, please don't give up hope. There is so much that you can do yourself to change your reality, your day-to-day life, your future. So much that medical doctors don't even think about or know about or accept because they're trained to only work with things that they learned about in medical school or in medical journals. And what I'm talking about is more lifestyle changes and very specific steps that each of us can take ourselves, even the smallest step, which is to start reading labels on your foods.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jen. Anytime. Let's do this again.
I look forward to it. And thank you to our listeners at Multiple Sclerosis News Today. This is the Multiple Sclerosis Podcast, and I am your host, Jen Powell. Share your thoughts on this episode through social media. You can find MS News Today on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us to keep updated on the latest news and to never miss new content and initiatives. Click the links in this episode's description.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com.